Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on freedom when we come back. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the most ignorant. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist the evils that they see perpetrated against our liberties, liberties such as privacy and our property by these powerful governmental agencies, the multinational corporations, the lobbies, and the news media. But you know, we don't have to remain helpless. The institution designed by God and incorporated into our Constitution, a Bill of Rights, is called the judicial power. The courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, our liberties, and our property. It's not the Congress or the political process. Now, did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination, as an example, is neither accorded to the passive resistant nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights? Not to someone who is indifferent thereto, and that's because it's a fighting clause. Its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat, and it cannot be claimed by an attorney or a solicitor. It is valid only when insisted upon by a belligerent claimant in person, so says U.S. v. Johnson. That's why I contend that we should listen more to the judges and less to the politicians and the lawyers. Now, did you hear what that judge said in his statement? He said, your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney. They can only be claimed by you, the belligerent claimant, and in person. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, educational, informative. Hey, best of all, it's free. And courtroom strategy procedure is also available on compact disc. If you'd like to get one for home education, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email, send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Hey, talking about freedom, freedom and liberty. You know, everybody talks about freedom and liberty. It's something that we here in America cling to. We talk a lot about it. I'm not sure that the average Joe Sixpack understands what the definitions and how these terms, freedom and liberty, are actually applied in American society today. That's why I thought I'd take a look at these two topics, liberty and freedom. And let's analyze them a little bit, because we used to have something here called liberty and freedom, something different than we call liberty and freedom today. A man goes out today, gets a marriage license, six-pack of beer. Maybe he's got an automobile, got a driver's license, registered car, has it insured. And he goes out and he's driving down the road and he says, wow, I am free. Well, maybe that's what he calls freedom. Now, the next guy, or maybe even the same guy a little later on, has a run-in here with the highway patrolman, social lady, a building inspector, or a fire inspector, or some other government bureaucrat, and all of a sudden, he calls me on the phone and he says, I'm from the People's Republic of California, Washington, Oregon, or New York. And he's complaining about these people interfering in his life. So I told you last time what the definition of liberty was. Liberty and freedom. The definitions of these words is uncontrolled or unrestricted restraint. It's living your life and nobody's telling you what to do and how to do it. That's freedom. Now somebody's going to call and say, well, you know, are you advocating anarchy? Well, someplace or somewhere between police state and anarchy, there's freedom and normalcy. On the one extreme, anarchy, that's just total lawlessness. That's what you've got over in Baghdad. And then here in America, we have police state. And that's what we have in New York and Massachusetts. And I'm advocating something in between, something that we had in this country in 1840, 50, 60, you know, before we had the police state. A man could get in his wagon, drive from St. Louis to Oregon, and he didn't have anybody telling him that he had to have a trip permit. He didn't have to check into some way station. He wasn't compelled to have a driver's license or register his car or buy insurance. And today, just talking about compulsory insurance, you know, they don't come to you and ask, would you like to have insurance to protect you from the possibility of a catastrophic automobile accident? They come to you and say, if you don't buy this insurance, we're going to punish you. That's called distraint. If you don't pay this tax, we're going to throw you in jail. That's compulsion. That's not voluntary tax. Now, anybody that thinks income tax is voluntary has to have his head up the wrong end of his anatomy. It is true that the tax is voluntary. That's because you volunteer to pay it. Then after you volunteer, what goes on thereafter is mandatory. That's not voluntary. So I come along and I say, well, there was a time before income tax, and we financed our government, and we became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world, and the world's number one creditor nation. Then we got the income tax, and now we're the world's number one debtor nation, and we're no longer number one in any of the 15 industrial indicators of industrial production. So I don't think that regulation, control, and more laws has made us wealthier, more prosperous, or freer. Now, of course, people will say, well, we have to have these laws. And I'm not quite sure why. So let me ask that question. Why do we have to have a seatbelt law? Well, because if we don't have a seatbelt law, people won't buckle their seatbelts. And so, what do you care? Why is it important to you that I don't buckle my seatbelt? What business is it of yours? Why do you care? Because I don't care if you buckled your seatbelt or not. And I wouldn't call the police and say, hey, look at old Bob over there. He didn't buckle his seatbelt. Go give him a ticket. Take his license away from him. Raise hell with him. Do something bad, wicked, terrible, awful, or evil because he didn't buckle his seatbelt. I'm sitting over saying, I don't care. Well, Bob over here, he's not very bright. Somebody's going to say, well, because common sense tells you to buckle your seatbelt. So, okay, Bob doesn't have any common sense, neither do I. Does the fact that Bob and I don't have any common sense, is that some reason why you ought to get in my face or in Bob's face and raise hell with us? Put us in jail. Take our cars away from us or do something else bad to us because we don't have any common sense. What the hell has that got to do with you? All right, now, bottom line is, the more laws you have, the less freedom and the less liberty you have. So the equation works very simply. Very, very simple. The more liberty that you possess, the less law you will be subjected to. If you want more liberty, you need less law. If you want more law, then you want less liberty. And that's because you have to have and exercise individual responsibility. Individual responsibility. Let's try it on this way. I'm not going to buckle my seatbelt, and I'm not going to buy insurance. I'm driving down the road. I run into a tree, I go through the windshield, and I get hurt real bad. I don't have any insurance. And so somebody says, well, now see, we got to pay your hospital bill. And I'm saying, why? Why do you have to pay my hospital bill? Why do you even have to pick me up off the street? You know, there are people out there, I guess we call them do-gooders, and I guess in their minds, They have it in their minds. We have to live everybody's life for him. And if he isn't smart enough to live his life the way we think it ought to be lived, then we're going to go live his life for him. Governor Schwarzenegger is doing that out in California. God, I'm glad I don't live in California. You see, I don't want any health insurance. I don't want you to buy me any health insurance. And if I get sick and I need an operation, would you just let me die? If I can't pay for the operation, then just leave me alone. I should have looked ahead. I should have been wise, you know, like you smart people out there that have health insurance. And I should have bought health insurance like you did. And I didn't. I spent my money on Wild Women and Song and Budweiser six-packs, smoked Camel cigarettes, and had a wonderful time. And you were thrifty and diligent, and you gave up the Wild Women and Song and the Roy Tan cigars and the Budweiser, and you bought health insurance. And God bless you. You know, when you get sick, you can go to the Kaiser Hospital and you can have that bypass surgery or that liver transplant or whatever the hell you need. And I don't blame you for looking ahead. And that's what I think. That's what I think everybody ought to do. And that's what I want you to leave me alone and let me do. Let me look ahead and let me think for myself. Let me decide whether I want to buckle my seatbelt or not and get out of my face. Let me decide whether I want to buy insurance or not. I know it's a wild new concept, but mull it over a little bit, because that's what freedom and liberty are all about. It's you making choices for yourself. Bottom line. Now, we got this Governor Perry down here. He wants to vaccinate all the children of Texas. I think the governor should vaccinate all of the children that the state of Texas owns, which is just about all of them. And any of you people down there who think that the governor is wrong and that he shouldn't be vaccinating your child, why don't you go into court and demonstrate to the court that you own a child, and I'll bet you that that court will allow you. They'll get out of your face. They will not compel you to vaccinate any of your children. They're only going to compel you to vaccinate the state of Texas children. I think that's the way that's going to work. That's what I've observed over the last 20 or 30 years. I think that more individuals out there, more families, ought to own more children, and I think there ought to be a lot more families with patriarchal marriages and fewer marriage licenses and fewer birth certificates. But you know, those are choices that you people have to make, and when you make those choices, there are legal consequences that come from them. So as I said before, all of the rights, privileges, and immunities that you had in 1787, you've got available. You probably don't have them today. But you have them available to you today, unless you squandered them, threw them away, or signed a contract with the state of Texas or some other foreign and alien god in violation of the First Commandment and got yourself into a bind, got yourself into a pickle, got yourself into a place where your rights have been waived. Let me show you a couple, three definitions here that maybe you'd never heard of before, like franchise. In California, your state tax commission. You know, here we call them tax commissions, but out in California they call it the State Franchise Tax Board. Here's what a franchise is. A franchise is freedom or immunity from some burden, restriction, or the like. Hence, it is a particular privilege conferred by grant from a sovereign or a government and vested in an individual or individuals. It's a positive right to do something otherwise legally incompetent. A franchise. You know, you got a McDonald's franchise. You got a Denny's franchise. You've got a franchise tax board in California. Well, they're giving you something that's otherwise legally incompetent, something that's otherwise illegal. So what was it you people out there in California wanted to do for which you have to pay the state of California a bribe or a tax called an income tax to do? You ever stop to think about that? Now, I want to go open up a Denny's restaurant, but I don't want to pay Denny's any franchise fee, and I want to capitalize on the name Denny's. After all, it's a very popular name. and I want to open a restaurant, and I want to call my restaurant Denny's, because if I call it Georgie's, nobody's going to come in. But if I call it Denny's, all you people recognize Denny's. They advertise a lot, and you never heard of Georgie's. And so you're not going to come into Georgie's when I open my restaurant and I put a big sign up, Georgie's. You know, I said, when the hell's that? But Denny's, you all recognize. Now, I don't want to pay Denny's. I don't want to go through their training program. I don't want to do anything that Denny's does. I'm going to do something that Georgie does. What do you think of that? So Denny's comes along and says, you know, Gordon, we have a franchise fee. If you want to join our organization, we got rules and regulations. California is just telling you the same thing. If you want to join the California club, if you want to join the Texas club, if you want the franchise benefits that we offer you here in Connecticut or New York or Maine, then you've got to subscribe to our franchise. But if you do that, you lose your freedom. I think I'd have more freedom with a Georgie's restaurant than with a Denny's restaurant. So that's what a franchise is. And we have this voting franchise. You know, everybody says, the president says, well, we want to go to Iraq and we want to make the world safe for democracy. That's what Woodrow Wilson was telling us in World War One. And the people over in the Middle East, you know, the Saudi Arabians, they've got a monarchy over there, and I guess they're pretty happy with it. I don't know. And the Iraqis, you know, they had this dictator over there by the name of Saddam Hussein. We went over there, toppled his government. I don't know how many people were opposed to Saddam Hussein, but it was probably a bunch. But 80% of the Iraqis are opposed to the American occupation. I saw those numbers the other day. That's 8 out of 10. I can't ever remember an American president having 80% of the American people behind him. Can you? Did President Bush have 80% after 9/11? Maybe. Maybe he did. For a short time. Did it ever occur to us that maybe the other people in the world don't want us coming over there telling them what kind of government's best for them? Has it ever occurred to us Americans that maybe if we just butted out of Iran and minded our own damn business, that maybe those Iranians could sort out their own government? And let's suppose they can't. Let's suppose those dummies over there, they just can't figure out what kind of government they ought to have, and they're saddled with these mullahs and whatever the hell you call them. So how does that impact upon us out here in Missouri? No, I really don't care whether those people over there ever have an election again. Now, I know somebody's going to write me a letter and they're going to say, oh my God, Gordon, you know, you are totally insensitive. You're right about that. Yeah, you're right about that. You see, a part of the thing called liberty is butt out of other people's business. Leave them alone and let them make their own mistakes. I know it's a god-awful heavy burden for Christians in America to let other people make their own mistakes. And that's because we're so damn much smarter than everybody else. We got to go all around the world. We have troops in 132 countries around the world. And that's just to show them how much we love them and how much we want to guide them and direct them so they don't make mistakes, so they can live the good life like we do here in America. But now, when we do that, we restrict their liberty. We get in the way of those people doing what they want to do. And they call that tyranny. I know you call it freedom and democracy, but they call that tyranny. They call that occupation, and they don't like it. And that's why you've got some problems over in Iraq. I mean, if you butt out and leave those people alone, they'd probably kill each other. They'd probably murder and have a big civil war and just raise hell over there. But then, you know, who in the hell are we to run around preaching to the people of the world about civil war? We had a big one over here, killed 600,000 people. You know, we had our own civil war. Remember that? And I don't think that anybody down in Georgia or anybody up in New York was too anxious to have somebody from Paris or London or Moscow or Tokyo come over here and preach us a sermon about how we ought to love one another and how we ought to conduct our own political affairs. We duked it out, and one side beat the other side. You know, when it was all said and done, you know, take a look at it today, and the people down in Atlanta, last time I was there, they got McDonald's and Big Macs down there just like they do up here in Springfield. They seem to be getting along all right down there in Atlanta. Now, they don't have any more freedom, they don't have any more liberty in Atlanta than I do here in Springfield, but I wanted to point out that franchise isn't the way to get more liberty or to get more freedom. Now, there's another word here that I think that we all ought to get real familiar with, and it's called privilege. Do you think that privilege has anything to do with liberty or freedom? Well, listen to this. A privilege is a right or immunity granted as a peculiar advantage or favor, a personal right, in derogation of a common right. It's a grant of a special right or immunity. It's a franchise or patent. So a privilege is a franchise. It's something that Dad can give you and Dad can take away. I remember if I used to have a bicycle, I was 11 years old, and then if you'd have come up to me and said, "Hey, whose bicycle?" I'd say, "That's my bike." Little Georgie Gordon, age 11. "That's my bike." One day, my dad got ticked off at me for something, and he said, "You're grounded for a week, boy. You park that bike on the porch, and you can walk now for a week." Whose bike was that? Yes, sirree, Bob, that was my daddy's bike, and my daddy could confer privileges upon me, and he could take them away at heartbeat. Social Security's like that. Social Security doesn't have any property rights attached or associated with it. It's a social welfare scheme, so says the Supreme Court, and Congress can terminate it in the morning at 8 o'clock. Just terminate it. Congress has that power. You might have paid into it for a long time. That doesn't mean you're going to get everything out of it. So that's what a privilege is. It's something that can be taken away from you. It's what a franchise is. It's a privilege. Then there's a thing here called limited. Limited. Then there's limited liability. But let's take a look at limited here. It's restricted, bounded, prescribed, confined within positive bounds, restricted in duration, extent, or scope. As to limited company, divorce, fee, and partnership. Restricted, bounded, prescribed. That's what happens when you get a driver's license. You become restricted, bound, circumscribed. Ranger Rick comes out and he tells you what you can do and can't do. He stops you in a roadblock. He says, "I'm going to search your car. Get out here and walk on the white line. Breathe into this balloon. Do all these things." That's what happens when you go fly on an airplane. Bend over, looking up the crack of your, you know what. That's not liberty. That's not freedom. That's tyranny. But it's limited. Limitations. And it lends itself to this word, limited liability. Limited liability. So before we get to limited liability, let's take a look at liability. What is a liability anyway? We can have liability, which is a state or quality of being liable, that for which one is liable, such as one's pecuniary obligations or debts, opposed to assets. Liable, bound or obliged by law or submission to other forces, answerable, as he is liable for the debt, men liable for military service, exposed to the danger or risk of something undesired. You know, liability is something that's undesired. You're liable for this income tax. You're liable for these Social Security taxes. You're liable for prosecution for not buckling your seatbelt. You have this liability if you don't perform on all 2,000 of these traffic statutes. You're liable to have your child taken away from you if you don't follow all of the child welfare and protection laws of your state. And send him to public school and have him shot up with snake venom and monkey pus. Well, what would happen if you could live your life? What if you could go get in your car and drive where you want to go without any fear or liability? You don't have to buckle your seatbelt or buckle your kid in the special child child seat in the back seat. You don't have to register your car, insure your car. You don't have to have a safety sticker on it. You can drive on skins if you want to. No, it's what we talked about a little earlier called individual responsibility. Now, the other day, my wife had a flat tire on the car. I can remember when I was 16 years old. We could buy a used tire for a dollar. Of course, that was a silver dollar. One used tire, $1. $4 would retire your car. Now, these are the tires that were used that old people had taken off of their cars to put on new tires. And they would have a little bit of tread on them. And we could drive those tires until they blew out. That's when you changed your tire. You knew that you got all the mileage out of that tire when it blew out. And then you got up and changed the tire. And you went in, paid a dollar, and had them fix it. It cost you $2. So it cost you a dollar for the tire change and a dollar for the new used tire. So for $2, you know, you could have it mounted. And for another 50 cents, you could have it balanced. Shucks. We were in Fat City. Now, I'm one of those old guys. And my wife had a flat tire. And so I went out and I looked at the tires and I said, well, that's it. Take it over to the DX station, have them put on new tires. You know, new tires, they cost you, I don't know, $75 a piece. Something like that. And so, you know, it costs you $150 to $300 to retire your car. You know, today as an old man, I don't think anything at all about spending $300 to put new tires on the car. I don't like flat tires. I don't want the hazard or the risk of having an accident because of a bad tire. I don't want to risk thousands of dollars worth of liability over a $75 or a $50 tire. But I did when I was 16. So I just wanted to point out to you that there are liabilities out there, and liabilities is the opposite to freedom. It's the opposite to liberty. It's something that you're contracted to. It's something that you're responsible for. Now, limited, remember, is restricted or bound. And there's a thing called limited liability, and we call that insurance. Insurance is limited liability. You see, you don't want to be strictly liable for all of your damages that you may cause somebody out there. And so you buy an insurance policy, like a homeowner's policy. That way, when I come over to visit and I slip on your sidewalk and fall down and sue you for $1 million, you're sitting there saying, well, ha-ha, Gordon, I'm protected. I'm in safe hands with Allstate because I've got homeowner's protection. I buy that insurance policy. Well, that's because you didn't want to be responsible for me coming over there and slipping on your sidewalk because you were too cheap to throw a little salt out there and protect me. Or because your kid was out there digging holes and I stepped into one of his holes, lost my balance, and broke my ankle. And so you don't want to be responsible for filling in your holes and putting salt on your sidewalk. So you'd rather buy an insurance policy called limited liability. Strictly prohibited, by the way, in the scripture. Now, I don't have any insurance policies, and so I'm liable. And when you come here as a student, and I dig holes out here, or my dog digs holes, or my guineas dig holes, and you step in one, break your ankle, you know I gotta pay that. I gotta pay you for that. And you might be off work, you know, for a couple of months, and I might have to pay your wages for a couple of months. And that's what strict liability is all about. I accept that responsibility. That's what responsibility is all about. But I want to be free. See, and the reason that I want to be free is because I want to make these decisions for myself. I can remember one time when I was in a limited liability business, the insurance agent would come by, and he's checking for fire hazards. So he'd come through our factory. Pretty nice guy, you know. He'd come through the factory, and he'd write up 10, 15 things that he saw that were fire hazards. And he'd hand me the list, and he'd say, now, if you can have these fixed between now and next Thursday, give me about a week, I'm going to come back next Thursday, and if these 14 things are fixed, I'm going to recommend that we maintain your insurance policy at the same premium level as we did last year. But if I come back next Thursday and these 14 things aren't fixed, then I'm going to recommend that the company raise your insurance rates commensurate with the new hazards and the new liabilities that you're imposing upon us. I thought that was a pretty fair deal. So I'd rush around and I'd take that list and I'd get all my men out there and I'd say, now fix this and fix that and fix this thing over here. He'd come back next Thursday, takes a look at it and says, you know, you have not added to our liability. So therefore, we're not going to add to your premium. Now, the insurance company accepts that liability for that premium. You're going to pay them some money, they're going to accept that liability. That's because you don't want to be liable. So I woke up one day and I said, well, gee, if that's good business for the insurance company, why wouldn't that be just as good a business for me? So I'm in the Gordon, I've got the Gordon Insurance Company. And I'm self-insured and I insure all of my liabilities or potential liabilities. And it makes me real cautious and careful. And when I've got holes out there, I go fill them in. And when there's ice on my steps, I go pour some salt on them. That's to protect you. It's good for you, and it's good for me, and it saves me the insurance premium. And then by being cautious and careful and putting ice on the sidewalk, it keeps you from falling down, so that way you don't have to sue me. Because I'm too cheap, you know, to put a little salt out there on the sidewalk. And at the same time, I don't have anybody coming around looking over my shoulder and telling me that I have to go fix this or fix that or something else. I look around and I say to myself, gee, that needs to be fixed. I just use a little common sense now. That's what freedom is. It's based upon responsibility. So the more responsible I am, the more money I can save, and the more freedom and the more liberty I can exercise. There's another thing here called immunity. Immunity. We'll take a look at immunity when we come back. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network, or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about freedom. People want freedom. They want more of it. And when they don't get it, they complain a lot. Well, there's a thing here called immunity. Immunity. I'd like to have a lot of immunity. If you're immune, you're exempt. Immunity means to be exempt. I'd like to be exempt from the highway patrolman. I'd like to be exempt from compulsory vaccinations and compulsory seat belt laws and insurance laws. So if you were immune, you'd be exempt as from attacks or protected from a disease. Immunity means freedom or exemption from any charge, duty, or tax. State or power of resisting the development of a given disease, or of resisting infection or microorganisms or their products. So it applies to immunity. People want to get immune, and that's why they go out and get vaccinated. They believe that if they get vaccinated, they won't get the flu. I'm always amazed at how many people I talk to, they get the flu, and they say, and I had my flu shot, too. Well, I guess I would have really had it bad if I hadn't gotten my vaccine or my vaccination. It never enters their mind that the vaccination didn't work, that it didn't protect them from the flu. I guess nobody wants to admit that I spent my $25 or $35, got my flu vaccine, and then I went out and got the flu. I can get the flu without spending $35 to get it. I haven't had the flu for many, many years, maybe decades, and I don't ever get a flu shot, and I'm an old man, and they tell me that I'm going to die for sure if I don't get my flu shot. I avoid vaccinations like I avoid Flo's whorehouse. I do everything in my power to stay out of California so that they don't compel me to buy insurance. That's why I stay away from Flo's girls. You know, when I was a youngster, you know, I couldn't wait to get over there to Flo's place, but now you'd have to drag me over there. Now, finally, we come to a word here called property. Property. Very important term in law. It's the holy grail of law. Property is the holy grail of law. It's founded upon a biblical law called thou shalt not steal. Without thou shalt not steal, you couldn't own any property. If you had liberty and freedom, you would have property, because liberty and freedom are attributes of property. See, most of us, when we think about property, we think about the chair or the desk or the house, the car, the bicycle, the motorcycle, the thing, the tangible thingy. That's what we see as being property. But there's another form of property, which is tangible and intangible. You see, property can also be intangible. And a right is an intangible property. See, my right to life is an intangible property. You can't see it, hear it, taste it, touch it, or feel it. But I own it. It's mine. It's there. It exists. It's property. And it's a right. And you can't have it. And if you take it, it's a theft. And it violates, you shall do no murder, for which there is a penalty. Now keep in mind that there's no such thing on planet Earth as a law without a penalty. Because if you've got a law without a penalty, you don't have a law, you've got a suggestion. Laws are not suggestions. Laws have teeth. They have penalties. They have consequences. They have results. So, you go down to Flo's whorehouse and you have a good time on Friday night. You come down with AIDS, herpes, or VD. There's the natural consequence of your actions. Do you always get caught? No. Shucks. Sometimes you can be driving 90 miles an hour and get away with it, especially if you've got a fuzzbuster on the dashboard. I'm not suggesting that you can't break a law without getting caught. Shucks, we all do that. We don't get caught very often. But I'm just pointing out that every time that you break the law, you run the risk. And if the risk, you know, gets up there high enough, that is, if you, you know, just want to test it, you know, why don't you run the stop sign down at the corner? You probably aren't going to get caught. Probably. Just keep doing it. Just keep doing it. And one of two things is going to happen. Either one, you're going to run into somebody and you'll have an accident. And that's running the stop sign has a consequence. Or some cop will see you do that, and then he'll come up and give you a ticket. And that's, there's the consequence of the act. But you can run that stop sign many, many times before you get caught. You can speed many, many times before you get caught. You can probably go down to Flo's place many, many times before you get a sexually transmitted disease. But every time you do it, though, you're running the risk. Now, I would like to live my life, in relative freedom and security. I like security, but I like my freedom just a little bit more than the security. So let's take a look at this word property over here. It's pretty important. Property is the exclusive right to possess, enjoy, and dispose of a thing, its ownership in a broad sense, any valuable right or interest considered primary as a source of wealth, that to which a person has legal title. It's the thing owned. It's an estate. It's an attribute common to all members of a class. Thus, a sweetness is a property of sugar. Well, my right to be secure in my person, houses, papers, and effects under the Fourth Amendment is a right. It's a property. So when the policeman says to me, I want to take your fingerprints and I want your mugshot, I say, hey, but hang on a second, partner. You need to get a court order under Rule 30B2, and if you do that, I'd be happy to comply. Because it's incident to a search, and it's the fruit of the poisonous tree, unless you have a court order. So let's get a court order, and let's dot our I's, cross our T's. And I've noticed here in Ozark County, Missouri, they don't ask me anymore for that. They used to in the old days, but they quit. And I think that that's a freedom that's worth protecting. Now, we got another thing coming up here in May of next year, and it's called the National Identification Card, or the National Identification Ticket of some kind. And your government wants you to carry your papers with you so that you can identify yourself. You don't have to get one of these. You don't have to. But if you don't have the National Identification Card, you will not be able to go into a federal courthouse. You won't be able to get a driver's license. You won't be able to get on an airplane. And there's about 10 or 15 things I saw on the list over here that you won't be able to get without your national identification card. So I said, okay, that's fine. I'll stay out of the federal courthouses, and I will stay out of the airplanes, trains, buses. I won't get a driver's license. I won't do business with the government. That's all right, because I don't do business with the government now. And that's because it violates the First Commandment. Remember, God told us, he said, practice my law, to hell with New York and Pennsylvania and Texas. You know, if you people down there in Texas would obey God and keep his commandments, you could tell Rick Perry down there to go to hell. You ever thought about that? I know it's a wild new concept. But, you know, if you want to worship the state of Texas, worship is obedience to the law of your sovereign. If you want to worship Texas, you need to obey the laws of Texas. If you want the benefits that go with membership in the Club of Texas, then you need to shut up, pay your dues, and do what you're told. Anyway, that's the definition of property. Here's another definition. It comes from Black's Law Dictionary. It says, that which is peculiar or proper to any person, that which belongs exclusively to you, the individual, and in a strict legal sense, it's an aggregate of rights which are guaranteed and protected by the government. Got two governments here. You got the government of God, and then you got the government of the United States. The right, that to which one has a just claim, any power or privilege vested in a person by the law. There's a thing here called absolute property. You ever heard of absolute property and personal property? Well, absolute property in respect to chattels, personal property is said to be absolute, where man has solely and exclusively the right and also the possession of movable chattels. Tell that to the highway patrolman the next time that he tells you to get out of the car and he's going to have it towed away. Now, if you stop and think about these automobiles for a minute, you don't own those automobiles. In fact, take a look at the title to your car. That is, for the three or four of you out there that actually have a title to an automobile, take a look at it. It doesn't say title, it says certificate of title. Now go look up the word certificate. A certificate is evidence of title. It's not the actual title, it's just the evidence that a title exists. But you don't have it. You've got the certificate of title. The evidence the title exists. And that's because the title is vested in the state. The state owns the automobile, and the proof of it is the two flags at each end of the vehicle, which in maritime law is called a vessel. It steers around islands, runs down a river of tar, backs up to docks, and it carries freight on board. Freight on board. So the car is a chattel, but it's not your chattel property. I mentioned this to you, I think, last time. There's some real property out here in America, but I don't know of very many Americans that own very much property. See, Americans practice the first plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for the abolition of all right to property in land. All right to property in land. I don't know of very many people that own any property in land here in America. I don't know very many people in America that own any chattel property either. They have an equitable interest in the state's property or the bank's property. Take a look at your mortgage. I don't deny that you're living in a house. I don't deny that you're making payments. I just deny that you own the house. You're living in the bank's house, and you've got the first right of refusal. But you don't own it, and it's not property. Well, it's not your property. It's not your property. Now, when we talk about rights, privileges, and immunities, there's a story I think I ought to tell you. Story. It's called The Law Enforcement Growth Industry. And I wrote this story when I was in jail one time. It was in 1984. And I was in cell block H of the Ada County Jail, and I was sitting there watching these guys go by, you know, and I said, you know, this is a strange phenomenon that I'm observing here. So I thought I'd sit down and write down my thoughts at the time, and so I took some notes, and I had a yellow pad there, you know, I'm taking these notes, and I got out of jail, you know, I went down to my office, and I sat down and I wrote this little story called The Law Enforcement Growth Industry. And in trying to appraise this issue of law enforcement, you know, the courts, the prisons, the punishment, the crime, the rehabilitation, the death penalty, incarceration, and cruel and unusual punishment, much has been written and much more is going to be written in the future. But one point that all of us seem to agree upon is that crime is out of control and something ought to be done about it. Now, here in America, we call this the land of the free and the home of the brave, and we refer to Russia or the Soviet Union or Poland or China as a police state. But you know, when we analyze the facts, they tell us a different story. And the facts show us that this country, America, holds more people per capita in our jails and prisons than they do in Russia or China. Did you know that? Yeah, it used to be, you know, back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, that the police states, the big ones, you know, were over in China and Russia, and they had all these people locked up in their gulags and out in their Siberian prison camps. Well, it's changed now. It's changed. We have more people locked up in prison than we have farmers in America. I guess 2.1 million people locked up in jail, 1.9 million farmers. Isn't that just special? Per capita, we have 300 million people in this country. We have more people locked up per capita in this country than any other country in the world, including South Africa, which used to be the world's number one police state. And then Russia was number two, or China's number two, and then Russia number three, or something on that order. We got them all beat now. And the Russians have one-third the number of people locked up as we do here in America. In reality, citizens of America are living in a police state, and they're totally unaware of it and totally unconcerned about it. And there's very little difference between our government here and the one in Poland or China, for example. Let's just test it. How about people living in, let's say, Russia or China? Do they have national identification cards? Well, here in the United States, we have on tap a national identification card coming in May of 2008. But kids, we have already had a national identification card called Social Security since 1935, and most of us carry driver's licenses around in our pockets, and when the policeman stops us and says, "Where's your ID?" you whip your license out and you show him your picture ID. You use it to cash checks and do business with nearly every day of your life. You have been identified and numbered like a cow in a pasture. All of my cows have tags in their ears. And all of you Americans have your papers in your back pocket or in your purse. And you wouldn't leave home without them. You're not quite sure what would happen if you did leave home without them, but you're afraid to leave home without them. Aren't you? Try it sometime. Just leave your identification at home. Don't take any identification with you whatsoever. And then just go from here to there. Go to grandma's house, you know, or drive down to the next county or something like that, or go someplace and see how you feel. I mean, you're just going to be terrified to leave home without your identity papers. You know, there was a time here in America when people did not have identity papers. Can you imagine somebody in 1840? He doesn't have a social security number. He doesn't have a driver's license. They're not even taking pictures. He has no picture ID. He's going to get in his wagon and leave St. Louis, Missouri, go clear out to Oregon without any personal identification. Can you imagine it? God, that ought to just terrorize anybody, shouldn't it? Now, do you need a driver's license to drive in Russia? Need a driver's license to drive in China? Do you need a driver's license to drive in America? You know, we look at those Russians and Chinese and say, "Oh my God, those people live in a police state. What the hell is different about your state?" You've got to have your identification papers with you at all times, and you've got to have your driver's license to drive. But there was a time in America when you didn't need a driver's license to drive. Did you know that? In fact, in Oklahoma, you didn't need one until 1939. I think they were the last state to put in a driver's license scheme. Isn't that just special? Now, somehow, in 1924, people could drive without driver's licenses, but for some reason, in 2007, they can't. I think the average Joe Sixpack would just be terrified to think about people out there driving on the highways without a driver's license. Number three, do you have to get permission to work where you want to and when you want to in Russia or China? Do you have to have permission? Because in America, you have to have permission. You've got to have an I-9 card. You've got to have a Social Security card. You don't just walk out here and go to work for somebody unless you can prove through your identification, through your documentation. So you can't work where you want to, and you can't work when you want to. You have to have permission. I don't know if you can work in Russia and China without permission where and when you want to, but I know you can't do it in America. And I would say that those are attributes of a police state. Now, I can remember as a youngster, first starting out, I didn't need any identification. I didn't need a social security number. I didn't need jack diddly squat to get my very first job. I didn't need that to go to work for here, there, or someplace else. I didn't need an I-9 form. I didn't need anybody's permission. I could work where I wanted to. But not in 2007. And they're putting this iron collar around our necks. And they call this the war on terror. But there's this iron collar. It isn't being put around your neck by Osama bin Laden. It's being put around your neck by the Congress of the United States and your president. So don't blame the ragheads now. They didn't do that to you. The Republicans did it to you. And I think the Democrats are going to go along with it. How about number four? Do you have to register your guns where you live? Have you got gun registration? Can you pack heat anywhere you want, when you want? See, I don't know if you can stick a gun under your armpit and walk around in downtown Beijing or Moscow. I don't know. They tell me those are police states over there, and I would imagine probably you can't. But here in America, with the exception of one state, I think there's one state, Vermont, where you have the freedom and the liberty to carry a gun. I think there's one state left. And they're pretty liberal up there. I mean, those Vermonters are about as left-leaning liberals as Joe Stalin or Lenin himself. But for some reason, they haven't gotten around to total gun registration and control yet. I think there's one state left. All the rest of us, you know, if you mean here in our state, until a couple of years ago, you couldn't pack heat concealed at all. Now you can go get a permit from your master. But remember, if you have to go get permits from your master, that's a franchise. That's not freedom. You see, liberty is based upon your choice. Do I want to carry a gun or not? Not in Missouri. You have to get your master's permission in Missouri. I say that's an attribute of a police state. Whether or not they do it in China or Russia, you know, that's another story. But you do it here in Missouri. You do it in California and Massachusetts. Those are police states. How about registering your car? In 1840, 1850, or 60, you didn't have to register your vehicles. You do today. Something's changed. Do you have to register your vehicles in China and Russia? I don't know. I imagine you do. But then we'd expect that in China and Russia because we know those are police states. But there was a time in America when you didn't have to register your car. You didn't have to register your wagon or your buggy. You could decide for yourself. It's what we called freedom of choice. It was a choice that you made as an individual. There was a time in America when we didn't have identity cards, a driver's license, permission to work, register a gun, or register a car, but we do today. Now, over time, the Russians have not rejected the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and they never accepted our Bill of Rights or the Ten Commandments. We Americans used to accept our Bill of Rights and the Ten Commandments. But now we have rejected both the Bill of Rights and the Ten Commandments, and we Americans have now adopted all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. I think communism has won out, hands down. Well, I'm about out of time, so I'm going to have to remind you that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and that The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. And for more information, why don't you call the law school here at georgegordon.org. That's our website, or you can call us. And while you're at it, why don't you ask for the free introductory CD package by calling the number at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. Our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.